Hi, I'm Jack. I'm an addict. Thank you, Ian, for asking me to speak at this meeting. I've been here many times. This was actually a very powerful meeting for me when I was getting clean. There was always amazing speakers here, and I got a great message. So I hope that I say something tonight that's going to help somebody. Let's see. I entered my first rehab on the 3rd of March 2008, and then my clean date is the 23rd of January 2011. So I think just for this short chair, I'll kind of concentrate on those 3 years because that's where a lot of stuff happened. I mean, the early stuff, I think I used to think it was important to tell a lot more about my childhood and that kind of stuff, but in the end, you know, everybody's child is either different or the same, but we all ended up in the same room. So that, you know, obviously those similarities there. You know, I do remember the addict, when the addict part of me kind of switched on, because I remember, you know, my parents used to have this like big alcohol and liquor cabinet, and I used to walk past it when I was younger and not even think about it. And then suddenly one day it became this like attraction, and I realized that there was something in there that could make me feel different. And my parents used to have this party. So I remember when I was probably about 11, they were having a party, and I remember I like snuck into the cabin when I thought nobody was looking, and I poured myself something in a tall glass, and I ran into the kitchen, and I like, damned it, thinking it was going to do something. It wasn't until later I realized it was tonic water. The next time, I drank beer, and that did work. And, you know, instantly, I felt different, and I felt, you know, better and happier and less afraid and less uncomfortable and all of those things. And things progressed. Drinking kind of progressed, started, you know, progressing more, and it was within a short time. It went from like beer to spirits, beer to wine to spirits, I guess, and that kind of stuff. And then when I was in my sort of late teens, it was just onto drugs of all kind, I guess, smoking weed from a younger age. But then, you know, it was 1991, and like the rave culture in England had just been going for a couple of years, and I fully embraced that and shaved my head and was taking 8 ecstasy and I dancing away and having the best time ever, which continued on for a while until I wasn't having a good time at all. But the progression happened, you know, pretty rapidly. I moved out to New York when I was 23, and I kind of lived there most of the time. And New York's actually where I got sober, so I have a lot of respect for the meetings there. But also in London, there's a powerful message here as well. Let's say I got to New York when I was 23, and I had 12, 13 years. I had kind of an amazing time. Also, I thought, you know, out nearly every night with my friends. I was working as well, but I somehow was staying out to 3 or 4 in the morning, you know, doing cocaine in toilets and drinking and doing all of those things that we all do, and somehow jumping out of bed at 8 in the morning and rushing off to work, and everything was fine. Until suddenly everything started to affect me differently. And, you know, I suddenly wasn't getting waking up anymore, I wasn't going to work anymore, I was having blackouts, I was disappearing, you know, I was no longer being reliable at work, and, you know, the whole unmanageability of the whole situation became very obvious to everybody around me. I was very good at keeping secrets for a very long time until it got so bad that I couldn't keep a secret because I was in a blackout and I didn't even know what I was doing. So, you know, things kind of got serious and my life started to get affected in every way. Friends started to drop off, telling me, saying they couldn't watch me. Basically, they likened it to me slowly committing suicide. You know, work colleagues couldn't give me work anymore. Family still stood by me, although that was very difficult for them. And the thing that kind of prompted me to first go into my first rehab on the 3rd of March 2008 was things, I guess, it got so bad and everybody was so worried. And of course, I was such a selfish addict. I really had kind of no idea that people were so worried. Long ago, I'd learned to like isolate and not be around other people just so I can be at home and do what I wanted to and wouldn't be judged by other people. I wouldn't have to give up my drugs to other people or all that kind of thing. And you know, that state just got to be a very insane state at home. I'm full-blown cocaine psychosis, you know, seeing things out of my eyes. I would spend about 45 minutes at the peephole of my apartment door looking down the corridor, you know, thinking somebody would come, jumping from pieces of furniture to pieces of furniture, thinking if I was going to touch the floor, something's like going to come out and get me. Just mania. And many nights I would end up just standing in the bath because I thought that was the only safe place. And always thinking that nobody else kind of knew this behavior was going on, and I was like presenting a very
staple friend to the rest of the world, but you know, obviously with my close friends, that wasn't at all. And one day a friend of mine had come over to see me in my apartment building, and my apartment building had a communal roof deck, and I was up there just getting some sun, and you know, I was kind of wasted up there, and the doorman had said that I was at home, so she was knocking on my door for a while, and I wasn't answering, and after a little while, she just called the police and the ambulance and everything, so I came down from the roof, and I found my corridor full of, like, police members, some SWAT teams, firemen, EMS workers, like ambulance workers, five or six friends all crying, and the police were like hammering on my door with three of them with one of those door rams, and they're about to break the door down because apparently all my friends had this wild nightmare fantasy that I was going to be so out of it, I was going to fall onto my mirrored coffee table and like cut myself all up and die. And my friend had actually thought that. So I came out of the elevator and I was just like, what's going on? And you know, I got taken to hospital and released pretty quickly, but then my friends had a big intervention with me and I went off to my first rehab. So from there, you know, it just shows how cunning and baffling the whole disease is. I actually talked my way out of that rehab after 21 days. I got them to give me an honorable discharge, and which I kind of waved around in my employer's face, my friend's face, saying, look, I don't really have a problem. It was just like a bad time and all of that. But in fact, for the next 3 years, every time I picked up again, the consequences just were worse and worse and worse each time. And you know, I think we've all heard the definition of insanity being doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And I totally was doing that throughout those 3 years. It was like, I'll just have one line, I'll just have one toke, I'll just have one drink, I'll just have whatever. And every time it was the same situation, blackout. 3 days later, no idea what I was doing. And I was going through my pockets looking for receipts, trying to figure out what I'd been doing for 3 days. But during that time, I was, you know, I knew there was a problem. I was trying to get sober, but I just couldn't do it or get clean. And I was going to meetings in New York, and I managed to stay clean for maybe 40 days or something. And then I'd pick up again, and I'd make friends at these meetings. But then after I picked up, I'd be too full of shame to go back to those meetings. And New York is full of meetings, so then I'd just find another one to go to. And this was a pattern that kind of I repeated throughout that 3 years of maintaining, being clean for about 40 to 50 days and making some friends at meetings, but not doing any real work, no fellowship, never did the steps. Everybody kept saying to me, you must do the steps. And, you know, I was too full of grandiosity to think that I needed to do the steps. I thought I could work all this out on my own. I thought I was too intelligent for the steps. I'd done quite well at work prior to the disease really hitting me hard. I thought I could solve my way out of this problem as well. In actuality, I was actually afraid to do the steps as well, because I was concerned that it was this like deep, this sort of enormous spiritual mountain that I wasn't going to be able to climb over, and I didn't think I had enough inside of me to actually go through the steps, and I didn't understand them, and I was scared of them, and hence I avoided doing them, and it was like this ridiculousness. I was attending 12-step meetings, and I never was doing the steps. And during that time, you know, the consequences just kept getting worse every time, from multiple blackouts, like just, you know, being picked up off the street by ambulances and just coming to tied to a chair in a ER or whatever, or in the emergency room, so not tied to a chair to restrain me, but just so I wouldn't fall off the chair, basically. And or coming to, and I was in the hospital gurney with a catheter and all that kind of stuff. One time I said to a friend that I wanted to kill myself when I was out of it, and after a few days, you know, the same thing happened again. I was found on the street, taken to hospital. My friend came, he told, in America they have this situation that it's called being under, the code is 5150, and it's if you're, if the police consider you a danger to yourself or to others. And my friend had told the ambulance workers, I told them I wanted to kill myself, and so therefore they placed me under this thing called the 5150, which is basically like, it's not like being arrested, but you have no rights. And so I came to, and I was this time manacled to a gurney with a catheter and a security guard, and I was just like, how did my life get to this point? I just couldn't even believe it. But in my head, all I was thinking of, the second I get out of here, I'm gonna go and score, get really out of it, and just disappear. And instead, I was sent off to a psych ward for 2 weeks. So, you know, nothing was getting better. And as I said, you know, friends were dropping off, everything else was happening, and how much time? Okay. And, you know, I didn't actually know what was going to happen with my life. At some point, I just started thinking, this is like a never-ending nightmare cycle that I can't seem to get myself out of. And I was still going to meetings, and I still had friends in recovery, but every time I
relapsed and picked up again or did something, then I would ignore those friends, and you know, the same cycle just kept perpetuating itself until one day I just kind of came to after like a run, and it's, I guess I didn't really have like a moment of grace, I just had like a moment of clarity, and I realized unless I really somehow figured this out, the rest of my life was just going to get smaller and smaller and smaller and sadder and sadder and sadder until one day I was going to be found on the sidewalk again, and at this time I wouldn't wake up. And so I picked up a phone and I called one of the people that I'd met during one of my endless cycles of going to different meetings, and somebody I'd actually liked in one of the meetings, and it just shows the power of recovery and support fellowship. It was like 7:50 on a Saturday morning. I don't think I'd know any friends really who'd be up at that time. He was at my apartment in 8 minutes and laughing at me, of course, like, he was like, Jack, where have you been? And then he dragged me out to get some food, and another friend came and joined us later, and he became my sponsor. And I just said to Brian, who became my sponsor, I just said, look, I've tried everything. I mean, at that point, I'd had been to 2 inpatient rehabs, 3 outpatient rehabs, had 3 different therapists, had a life coach. I've basically thrown money at my problem, thinking I'd like buy my way out of it, fix myself somehow. I just thought it was maybe like an illness I could be operated on in some way. And none of that was happening. So I just said to Brian, the only thing I've never done is the steps. And he was just like, we're going to take you through the steps. And that's what happened. For the next 90 days, I mean, I called up my agency and said, hey, I'm taking 90 days off to get sober. And they were like, yeah, because I've said that to them probably 6 or 7 times, and they were about to lose faith in me. And so over the next 90 days, I tried to do everything completely different, and I filled my life with recovery. I went to minimum 3 meetings a day, some days 5 meetings a day. I met with my sponsor 2 or 3 times a week, and we read book, and we went through everything, and we talked about, you know, my life and how it was just like so inexplicably unmanageable at this point that I didn't even know if I was going to be able to pay my next month's rent, kind of thing, and everything else, and not to mention my health and all that kind of stuff. And with Brian, who's very patient, we went through the steps, and that's kind of where the miracle happened. And I was the biggest unbeliever, and I was the most cynical person about the steps, and I just, you know, I read them at every meeting, and I would just like think, how is that really going to help me? And then working through them properly, it was just astonishing. I was blown away. I was like a non-believer who was converted. After step 5, the obsession to use overnight disappeared. I don't know how it happened, but it just disappeared overnight. And I was so grateful. My God, was I grateful. And we kept working the steps and working the steps up through to 8 and 9, and I'm living 10, 11, 12. And everything changed in my life. Everything they said would happen, happened. You know, all the promises, all, I got my life back, I got my friends back, I got my family back, I got my career back, I got my happiness back, I got my health back. You know, everything returned to me that I thought that I'd lost or was losing. And it 100% was doing the things that, you know, we're in a meeting that we're meant to be doing, which are the steps. And it's such an obvious thing to say now, but back then I was just convinced that the steps would never work, and it was just like some tacked on bit that somebody had put in there thinking that was like, you know, an extra bit of exercise you could do if you wanted to or something. But in fact, I learned it was a vital thing to get you sober, and it 100% worked with me. So yeah, I'm just so grateful to NA and to the program and to the steps and to my sponsor and to everybody else in recovery. You know, of course, what ended up happening is when I did get sober during that 90 days, I started going back to all of the meetings that I had been going to before, but I'd never gone back to because I was full of shame. And rather than going, then, you know, making fun of me when I went back to those meetings, they were just like, Jack, we've been waiting for you. Here's your seat. And they were like, oh my God, you're sober. And I suddenly had this huge sober community in New York. It was incredible. And that was another amazing thing. And just the power of the program and the power of the program in action, you know, the steps work. And I was such a cynical non-believer until I did it, and it was like that. So if anybody's struggling, please have an open mind and do the steps, because that's where the magic happens, and you know, that's when you get clean. Thank you.